Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. 20 countries were indexed to examine the risks and opportunities of inclusive growth for investors, focusing on technology as a lever that can help combat global economic disparities. See where each country stands at morganstanley.com/inclusive growth. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Politico Money Podcast. So glad you could be with us. This week is the first in a two-part series on infrastructure. We're to be joined by Senator Tom Carper of Delaware. He's the ranking Democrat on the Senate committee that would start up any big infrastructure bill. And next week, we'll be joined by Senator James Inhofe, who is the chair of that committee, to give us the Republican perspective. We're going to try to get to the bottom of whether Republicans and Democrats and the White House can agree on a major infrastructure spending bill that would address the nation's crumbling roads and bridges and ports, that would build more rural broadband, that would take a lot of the steps that are needed to improve infrastructure in the United States in ways that would juice the economy. Everybody pretty much agrees that it's needed, but there are big differences between Republicans and Democrats on how much the federal government should spend and how much should come from state and local governments and the private sector. So we start with Senator Carper, who has some great thoughts on this. He also tells us about his love for Amtrak, his love of the Detroit Tigers. So it's an interesting chat with Tom Carper. Hope you enjoy that, and then look forward to Senator Inhofe next week. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us, write that written review. But without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Senator Tom Carper of Delaware on America's infrastructure. Senator Carper, thank you so much for joining us on the Politico Money Podcast. Super timely topic right up your alley on infrastructure, but I want to start by just your general love of Amtrak, and you're a Delawarean, and your fellow Delawarean, former Vice President Biden, also a huge proponent of Amtrak, and you take it every day, right? You don't actually live in Washington?
Yeah, I do. We go back and forth on the train. I love the train. I first rode a train when I was about 5 years old, and I was born in West Virginia, a little town called Beaver, right outside of Beckley, coal mining town. And my sister and I go back later on in life. We go back and visit my grandparents. We walk out of the front steps, and there's a little fence. And on the other side of the fence was a railroad track. And every day, a freight train would come by. And my sister and I would stand by this fence. Like, here comes the train. We jump up and down. We pump our arms, trying to get the engineer to blow the whistle to acknowledge that we were alive. And every now and then, they'd blow the whistle, and we were just thrilled. One day, the train comes along, and we're jumping up and down, and the train stops right in front of us.
Nice.
And off the train comes our grandfather. He worked for the railroad, and he was a fireman. That's when they had coal and fire trains. And he gathered us up, put us on the train, and we took off on the freight train. My sister and me, we're like 5 and 6 years old.
Awesome.
And we went for what seemed like 500 miles, it was about 500 feet. And the train stopped and he let us off, and we ran back to my grandmother and he said, "Don't tell your grandma, don't tell your grandma." We ran into the house, "Grandma, grandma, guess what grandpa did?" "He didn't." "Yes, he did." But ever since then, I've had this insane love for trains, not just Amtrak, but all kinds of trains. And you can move a ton of freight from Washington, D.C. to Boston, Massachusetts on 1 gallon of diesel fuel. 1 gallon of diesel fuel. So energy efficiency, from, you know, good stuff for the environment, for an efficient way to move people and goods, trains make all the sense in the world. And I love to ride trains, especially great trains around the world. And we could have great trains in America. And hopefully we will again someday.
Yeah, and we'll certainly get to what piece that plays in the infrastructure, world. The other thing that I should give full credit to Bridget here, because she's given me the good research on you and your background.
Bridget knows nothing.
I did nothing, basically. You became a fan of the Detroit Tigers. How does that happen for a guy from Delaware who spends a lot of time in D.C.? I guess there's no Delaware team, but how did you wind up a Tiger fan?
When I was in the third grade, my best friend, Billy Sackett, moved to Bay City, Michigan. And he went to a Tigers game as a kid, and he wrote and told me about it. For no other worldly reason, I become this lifelong rabid Tigers fan. When I was my last year as governor, I was invited to Detroit by the Tigers the last week they played at Tiger Stadium to throw out the opening pitch. And and I always told people when they say, what do you want to be with your life? And I was naval flight officer for 23 years. I was treasurer, congressman, governor, senator for Delaware. People say, what if you weren't doing that, what would you want to be? And I'd always say, third base for the Detroit Tigers. So here I am, Tiger Stadium, the last week they're in, 50,000 people in the stands. I get to throw out the opening pitch. Not a bad pitch. And I walked over and I stood on third base before I walked off the field. And I said, this is mine. Third base, yeah. After all these years. And then I walked off the field. And the next week, they closed Tiger Stadium.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's
my
story.
Did you take third base with you? Like you picked it up?
I went up to the broadcast booth, sat there with Ernie Harwell, Hall of Fame sports announcer, did the play-by-play for the Tigers, something I'd done with him in stadiums across America. I'm a huge fan. I even called Chris Elliott. We talked about the team, player by player. He succeeded his dad as the president of the Tigers. I'm going to be in Detroit next week for the Detroit Auto Show to meet with a lot of the auto manufacturers and talk about cafe standards and stuff like that. And also just to relish being close to Comerica Park.
Yeah, we all love the wonder of baseball. I'm a huge Yankee fan. I'm sure you're.
Are you really?
You're an admirer of the Yankees.
2 years ago for Father's Day, my son Christopher, who was living in New York, he said to me, "What do you want for Father's Day, Dad? What would you like to do?" And I said, "Sometime this year, when the Tigers are playing at Yankee Stadium, I would love for you to take me to a Tigers game at Yankee Stadium." I've never been to a Yankee Stadium. He said, "Okay, well that shouldn't be hard to do." He called me back an hour later, Ben, and he said, "Dad, the Tigers are playing at Yankee Stadium on Father's Day. Do you want to go?" Wow. And they said, yes. And so we all went. And we got seats right way up in the stands behind the home plate. And the Tigers crushed them. It was just a glorious day.
Yeah, there you
best
go.
Father's Day I've ever had.
So let's talk about a little bit about your term as governor. I think probably when you developed a passion for and interest in the importance of infrastructure to Delaware's economy. And now we're talking about
that's when I realized, Ben, the Tigers probably weren't going to come through for me.
That's when it all became clear that the dream wasn't going to happen. But tell me a little bit about how your experience as governor informed your views on how important infrastructure investments are to economic growth and the relationship between the public and private sector when you're talking about infrastructure projects. How did being the governor of Delaware kind of educate you on that?
Oh, yeah. Good. Great question. I love being governor. My wife says I'd like to go back and be governor for another 8 years. But I was governor at the right time. We had 8 years, we had balanced budgets. 7 years, we cut taxes, paid down some debt. I got AAA credit ratings. More jobs were created in those 8 years than any time in the history of the state of Delaware. I did not create one of those jobs. But what I focused on, what my administration focused on, working with the legislature, the private sector, and others, labor, we focused on how do we create a more nurturing environment for job creation, job preservation. That's the key. I always come at it from, I think the best thing that we can do in terms of helping people, I love helping people. We have a strong constituent services operation in my Delaware operations. But I think the best way you can help somebody is make sure they have a job so they can support themselves and their family. And so that's that nurturing environment, transportation and infrastructure, including not just roads, highways, bridges, but rail, airports, ports, rivers. It's all part of the infrastructure. Access to the internet, it's all part of that nurturing environment.
Okay. Well, let's talk about where we are now in terms of the prospects for getting an infrastructure bill through Congress this year. I kind of come at it from a cynical perspective or just a not terribly hopeful perspective that there's a big divide on what the Trump administration is going to propose, presumably the end of this month or early next month on an infrastructure plan, and what Democrats would be willing to support. So let's say they come forward with a proposal that would only spend $200 billion in federal money, their idea being to leverage that to $1 trillion in overall investments by presumably getting buy-in from corporate America to do port projects, to do road projects, to do bridge projects, maybe rural broadband. We can talk about kind of what the specific elements of infrastructure would be, but let's say that's the proposal. Is that, to you, a starting point where you could get to something that would have Democrat support in the Congress and we could actually get an infrastructure bill passed this year?
I'm Mr. Glass Half Full. I'm sitting here with a glass of water. It looks about half full, but it could be bone dry, and I would say, oh, it's half full. I'm a Mr. Optimist. My wife of 32 years, Martha, says, I need to be more like her, like a realist.
Right.
And I said, no, I can't change. I'm just too. So I'm optimistic about most things, including being able to pass infrastructure legislation, and with a big piece of that being transportation infrastructure. I serve as senior Democrat on the Environment and Public Works Committee. The funding for whatever we do comes out of the Finance Committee, and I'm fortunate to serve on the Finance Committee too, so I have a chance to help in the authorization of the programs, writing that, and then figuring out how to pay for this stuff. We have a good record in the Environment and Public Works Committee, though, of Democrats and Republicans working together, with Jim Inhofe, Republican, Barbara Boxer, Democrat, who were the leaders of our committee and produced the last two transportation bills. And so I think there's a good track record for us working together. And I'm encouraged that if we were left to our devices, we could probably pull this off. We had a meeting this week with Elaine Chao and Gary Cohn. And they floated this idea again of somehow $200 billion of federal funds being used to leverage another $800 billion in non-federal funds. And I said to one of the top folks in the administration this morning at a breakfast meeting, I said, you know, in Delaware, and when I was governor, you had this 80-20 sharing arrangement on, particularly on roads that are where there's an interstate connection, but 80% federal, 20% state. And you're telling me you're going to come in and say to a governor of a state to a, we're going to go from 80-20 federal state to 20-80? Really?
Yeah. See, this is why I'm skeptical.
How does that work? And I think probably not too well. I think ultimately the way to pay for this stuff is through, I call it vehicle miles traveled. They've been experimenting this. There's an Oregon called Road User Charge for 10 years where people, 10,000 families participate and they pay a fee. It's in conjunction with how many miles they travel on the roads of Oregon. And you combine Road User Charge, which goes by RUC. The acronym RUC. You combine that with Highway Speed Easy Pass. I call it RUC and Roll.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. And I think that's where we ultimately want to go, so that users, businesses, people who use roads, highways, bridges would pay for them by virtue of the number of miles they travel. Ford and GM announced 2 months ago that by 2025, they will introduce 23 all-electric vehicles. 23. Toyota has introduced a whole new brand of cars called Mirai, which means future, and they'll be fuel cell. They won't use a drop of gasoline, not a drop of diesel fuel. They're going to use the roads, highways, bridges. They're not going to pay to build them or to maintain them. So we need eventually to migrate to some kind of vehicle miles traveled approach, which is protective of people's privacy. That's where we ought to go. But in the near term, I think we ought to restore the purchasing power of the user fees that we do have. We haven't raised the gas or diesel tax since 93. Just restore the purchasing power of that over maybe 4 years, 4 cents a year for 4 years, index it going forward, but eventually migrate toward a vehicle miles traveled. And also for new construction, do more tolling and use the technology to make it hassle-free.
Yeah. I mean, the gas and diesel tax makes a lot of sense as a mechanism to pay for an infrastructure project. But I mean, do you really think that there is political support for that on either side, but particularly among Republicans? No Republican I've ever asked about it seems particularly enthusiastic about it. This is where I get sort of, I guess, less glass half full than you. You know, you're at, it should be 80-20 federal, you know, state, local, and corporate. They're at 20-80. That's oceans, miles, you know, continents apart. So I guess I'm just not sold on the idea that there is a path forward here. And maybe I'm totally wrong about this. But yeah. Do you think there would really be a new gas tax?
What did Henry Ford used to say? Henry Ford used to say, if you think you can or you think you can't, you are right. Yeah. And this is a situation where I think we need to do something. People want us to do something about roads, highways, bridges and stuff. Like they get every year, Civil Engineers Association across the country, they rate our roads, highways, bridges, D as in deplorable. And eventually we've got to do something about it. We got to find a way. I don't know if it's a way to clean up earmarks and, you know, correct the, like to reform earmarks, but it'd give the ability to legislators to do what we do in Delaware. In Delaware, we have an operating budget. We have a capital budget. Capital budget is brick and mortar, including transportation. If a legislator wants a project, a transportation project in Delaware to be in the capital budget, five-year capital budget, they got to be willing to vote for revenues. Okay. Yeah. If they're not willing to vote for revenues, they're not going to get their project funded. And yeah. So I mean, there's an understanding.
Yeah. You seem to have an ally in President Trump on the earmark thing, which surprised a lot of people. Did it surprise you when he sort of hinted that he'd like to bring back the earmark process?
I'll say this delicately and respectfully. little that comes from his mouth surprises me.
That's artfully.
He also said earlier this year, also actually a year ago, he was asked about funding infrastructure, you know, transportation infrastructure, and he said, "I'm not going to take." You're asking about user fees and stuff like that. He said, "I wouldn't take user fees off the table." Immediately, 2 hours later, I put out a press release and said, "Good for you, Mr. President." 2 hours later, he took it off the table.
Right. So, well, he changed his policy on the FISA legislation within the course of two tweets this morning as we're recording this. So,
what is it? This consistency is a hobble. What does it say?
Small minds.
A small mind. There we go. So obviously, he's got a big one.
You know, he's clearly incredibly smart. So anyway, well, if you could write this legislation, if Democrats were in control of the Congress and the White House, and you had a kind of opening bid on what the federal government should spend on infrastructure improvements, I mean, the number I've seen from, I don't know if it's a Council of Engineers or one of these groups that rate America's infrastructure, say it's at least $2 trillion to open with, to start with, just to address some of the more critical needs on, you know, roads, bridges, ports. What's the number? What does the federal government need to spend to get us up to from a D to a B?
Like a B plus?
Yeah, or B plus. Yeah. I don't want to be overly aggressive.
Well, Democrats already laid out early this year what we thought was needed, and kind of laid out how we thought it should be spent. $1 trillion. And should it be more? I think you could make a good argument. The experts say it could be a good deal more than that. But it's a pretty good opening bid. And for me, I'm a recovering governor, okay? I feel that this is a shared responsibility. It's not just on the federal government, federal taxpayers. It's a shared responsibility. It's states, it's local governments, it's users. And especially on roads, highways, bridges, and such, and for other infrastructure, including like ships and ports and stuff like that, docks. The idea that a user fee actually makes some sense. We have a user fee called a harbor maintenance fee for maintaining harbors. And unfortunately, over the years, the money that the ships and shippers have paid into the barges have paid into the harbor maintenance fee, we don't use it all for harbors. We use it to help pay for other stuff. And we're moving away from that. We're finally getting back to what was originally intended. But I think most people understand if we want to have, whether it's better roads, highways, bridges, trains, you know, all that stuff, airports, we got to pay for them. Those who use them should largely pay for them. But there's a shared responsibility, And if we're smart, in Delaware, we do a fair amount of tolling. And
I've driven your roads. I know about the tolls.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the best things I ever did as governor and the senator was to move to highway speed easy pass on I-95. People used to back up for miles around every holiday trying to get through our state to pay $3 or $4 just to get for our state and have to wait half an hour to do that. And so we one July 4th weekend, we converted to highway speed easy pass on I-95 in Delaware. And if you're ever coming north or south, right to the Delaware line, to the toll plaza, you look up over the toll plaza, and there's this like an arch. It looks like the St. Louis Arch. And we actually did a press conference in that arch over I-95, opened up the sides, and on the 3rd of July. And for as far as you could see, north and south, no traffic, no backup. But people had to pay. And the highway speed, but people are willing to pay.
Believe me, I'm one of those people. I've driven either from D.C. or from New York to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, just about every summer since I was a kid. And I do appreciate the highway speed easy pass, and I am willing to pay for it. So I'm a pretty good example
good.
Of somebody.
You're a living example.
Yeah. Do you think?
Let me just say on toll, the idea of public-private partnerships, should we do more of that? Sure. A lot of folks say, especially the truckers, say the idea of me paying a toll on roads I've already built, already existing roads, that doesn't make sense. They think that's unfair. I don't think there's support for doing that. But the idea of having tolling for new construction, especially if you can make it convenient, and people don't have to stop forever, can go right through a highway speed, you pay for it off your credit card, that's doable.
Yeah. Do you think Democrats are really overall in the mood to do a deal with Republicans and President Trump in the 2018 election year on infrastructure, given, you know, you're generally in pretty good position right now that voters don't really like the tax bill. They don't really like the president or Republicans in Congress. What's the incentive for Democrats to give them another big accomplishment if you can somehow find this middle ground?
Yeah, I'm not so sure at the end of the day the tax cut bill that was passed is going to be viewed warmly. by voters either this year or later on. I think when people don't like it already, and I think as they get to know it better, they're not going to be more fond of it. People want government to work, and they know. I think they're convinced. You know, what is it? Every year, I think Texas A&M updates a study that shows how many hours do we actually sit in traffic, not moving. Like it's like 48 hours a year. We just sit there, not going anywhere. People know that's going on. I've had to have my like new 2001 Chrysler Town & Country minivan in for some work on the front end because of some, you know, potholes and that sort of thing. After 466,000 miles, I had to replace the struts. Can you believe that? They just don't make vehicles like they used to.
But how many miles?
466,000.
Seriously?
I bought it the year I stepped down as governor.
That's pretty amazing. Wait, now, what kind of car is that?
It's a 2001 Chrysler Town & Country minivan. I took my son, Christopher, who was 12 at the time, and I said, Christopher, let's go shop for new cars. It was right. I was just stepped down as governor. So we went and we drove Porsches and Corvettes and Mustangs and everything. Then I bought a minivan. He said it was bait and switch. And now he's still driving in the same minivan.
That is a classic dad move, a classic dad car, and that's an impressive number of miles. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Senator Carper. But now, a word from our sponsor.
A message from Morgan Stanley. Technology and globalization have led to major advances for many, but others have seen their income and well-being stagnate or even decline. Support for inclusive growth, economic growth that is broad-based, sustainable, and provides opportunities for all to participate in its benefits, is gaining momentum. The desired result? Dramatic reduction of poverty and inequality. As the world seeks to address these challenges, there is significant potential for private sector investors to pursue opportunities which support inclusive growth, such as in India. Investments in technology that can enable improved access to education may help balance a highly unequal education system and may thrive in an area with government commitment to increased workforce quality. Read more at morganstanley.com/inclusivegrowth. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
So let's talk about, like, first of all, people talk about infrastructure as a sort of, big, vague topic. Like, oh, I'm for infrastructure. Yeah, we got to do roads, bridges. I don't think a lot of people necessarily know exactly what it means and kind of what the top priorities are. So let's say you had, you know, $200 billion in federal money and you got some state and local buy-in and some leverage with corporations. Like, give me like the top three things that need to be fixed in the United States that would help economic growth. Like three things.
I'll just give you a good example. If let's say ships unload in Seattle, Washington, coming from overseas, unload cargo, is bound for the East Coast. And they send it by rail through Chicago. It takes about going from Seattle to Chicago, it takes about 2 days by rail to get to Chicago. Last time I checked, it takes about 4 days to get through Chicago, and then another day or two to get to New York City. Those kind of situations where it's kind of multimodal, where trying to move products using truck, using rail, using ships and so forth, to be able to make all that work in a more seamless way and a more efficient way would be huge. We waste a huge amount of time and money and energy in that. That's just one, I think, good example. A lot of work has been done to correct that, and maybe can serve as a good model as how to fix a problem like that. Another problem we have, we got a lot of bridges. We've got tens of thousands of bridges in this country. The majority of them are okay, but there's a heck of a lot of them that are not, that are like an accident waiting to be happen. And some of them have weight limitations on the bridges, and you have to slow down traffic and backups and stuff like that. But the bridges are just a ticking time bomb in a lot of places. The other thing, this is not something that gets people really excited about, but just the condition of our roads, highways, bridges, the driving on them and stuff. And I mentioned having to get the struts and the shock absorbers in my minivan fixed recently. But we spend a lot of money on our cars and frankly, trucks, that the quality, the surface of the roads is just not very good in way too many places. So those are some of the things. And I don't know if there's any one thing that by itself, but do it all together. The idea of being able to move people and product faster, more efficiently, in a more timely way, more cost-efficient way, reduce pollution, reduce emissions, that'll only be good. And if the idea that you have to spend a fortune to do it, Not really. If we would actually just, as I said earlier, somehow figure out how to charge fees in consumer-friendly ways that, so that those who use roads, highways, bridges pay for them, that's, who can not like that? And the other thing about as we collect money for example, for user fees, let's say gas and diesel tax at the federal level, 20% of that we use for transit, you know,
yeah,
for to get people off the roads, highways, bridges. And so it's a big, big support for transit.
Yeah. So can we go back to Amtrak for a second?
Oh, yeah.
Because we talked about this off the air, but we should talk about it on the air, because I know a lot of people maybe listening to this podcast on the Acela from New York to D.C. and the biggest complaint on that, or the regular Amtrak in general, is that the friggin' Wi-Fi never works. And so, you know, you get, you're cut in, you're cut out, you have to use your own, then your battery gets drained. You spend a lot of time on Amtrak. You talk to the Amtrak board. Why doesn't the Wi-Fi work?
We have a new CEO. I used to be on the Amtrak board when I was governor. And I said to people, I would say, you know, if we could have Wi-Fi on board, more people want to ride the train. And so that's, we tried to do it over there. They've tried to do it over the years. We have a new CEO. Wick Moorman just stepped down. He was CEO for a year or so. He used to run Norfolk Southern. And I've asked to have maybe breakfast or lunch with both of them. And one of the things we're going to talk about is Wi-Fi and the ability to use our internets and so forth. And I always use my cell phone. I don't use the Wi-Fi when I take the train, but I use my, and frankly,
yeah, I use
I'm
my cell
out
phone
of,
too, but you know, if I'm not plugged the in,
the service
and it's
is not
my
good.
Battery.
The service is not what it ought to be. And for Amtrak, it's one of those deals where, you know, this is, I'll never forget this. Been in business school, first year business school, took a course in marketing. And I remember one day the professor brought to our class a container of, not of butter, but of margarine, you know, a plastic container of margarine. And he said, what am I holding here? And people are like, well, you're holding a container of margarine. And he said, when people buy this, what are they buying? And we talked about it. We said, well, some people are buying the margarine because it tastes good, or it looks good, or it's healthy, or it's low and high and low in certain things, higher in certain things. Some people are buying it because they like the container, because they want to reuse the container. But some people take the train for, people take the train for different reasons. But one of the reasons that they could be taking a train is because it's a civilized way to travel, and they have really good internet access. And that's one of the things I'm going to push over breakfast and lunch as not only a recovering governor, but a recovering Amtrak board member and an active passenger.
Yeah, well, I think if you could fix the Amtrak Wi-Fi, you'd probably have a seat.
I'm going to work
Senate
on the toilets,
life.
Too. I'll work on the toilets, too, and we'll talk about that later.
I think that begs a more explanation of the problem with the
yeah,
toilets.
Yeah, I will say
Amtrak.
This. Amtrak, I always oftentimes take the Northeast Regional. Don't often take the Acela, although when I was on the board, we actually introduced the Acela. But on the Northeast Regionals, they are changing out the upholstery in all the cars. And I must say, first time I stepped foot into one of the newly refurbished, the cars are old, but it was like walking into an elegant, like it could have been Japan or China. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing some things right, too. So
yeah. Let me ask you about your general relationship with the Trump administration. You mentioned this meeting you just had with Elaine Chao, the transportation secretary. What was that like? And have you dealt with Trump himself? How is your relationship to this administration?
Some of the people, you know what's ironic? Last administration with Barack Obama and Joe Biden, like a bunch of the people on their cabinet, so I knew them. I know them for years. George W. Bush. He put a bunch of governors on his cabinet, and a lot of them are folks I served with, Tommy Thompson, Mike Leavitt, and all kinds of, Christy Whitman, were my buddies. And now it's not that way. It is not that way. So there's a lot of people who are new. Elaine Chao, I know, like a lot. One or two others I know and like very well. But I've not spent a lot of time at the White House. I just don't think they have realized how valuable I can be to working out the consensus. But eventually they'll figure it out. But we had a nice meeting with Elaine and Gary and a fellow named DJ, and who's smart, the smart fellow who's part of their think tank on stuff like this. Hopefully the president and the administration will finally lay out what they have in mind. We've been waiting for a year, and I think they're hopefully with the president of State of the Union, he'll be a little more specific, and they'll not just talk in poetry, but some prose. We'll have some prose here, and have a chance to kick the tires. I will say this is what I find troubling. I told them, we were with Elaine and the Secretary Chao and Gary and DJ. I said, I'm not from Missouri, but you got to show me how you take $200 billion of federal money and somehow turn that into $1 trillion.
Did they have a good answer for that? Because I don't understand
not really.
It either.
I don't think really. But the idea you can privatize, you can leverage a lot of private money and get the states and local governments to put in a whole lot more. Can we do some of that? Probably. Yeah. I can see how some of that. They think we can save a lot of money by streamlining. And are there ways to get better results for less money in transportation? Probably. And use technology and that sort of thing. But by to flip from an 80-20 cost share with federal and state to a just the opposite, I don't know that that works. We'll see. Yeah, governors might have something to say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to let you go in a couple of minutes, but I do want to ask you about the tax bill because I've got to write about it. Walmart announced they're going to give a minimum wage of $11 and they attribute it to the tax cut bill. You've got all of these various companies offering their workers $1,000 bonuses based on the tax cut bill. So what do you say to Republicans who say, look, this thing's already working?
Yeah. We have a saying in Delaware that you could put lipstick on a pig, but at the end of the day, it's still a pig. And so let's just wait and see just to what extent this tax cut bill, which really benefits wealthier people than the folks in the middle and at the bottom, let's see if it really turns out to be the kind of economic boon that they believe it is. Most economists don't think it's going to give us a huge bump. And I hope I'm wrong. Time will tell, and they'll have the opportunity to make their case. And if they're wrong, we'll have the opportunity to make that case as well.
Okay. And I guess just give me the first, I want to ask you on the impact of the tax cut bill. Obviously, it's projected to add $1.5 trillion in deficits. I don't know that Republicans are going to be here to spend a whole bunch more money when they've already added this money to the deficit. Does the tax bill make an infrastructure agreement less likely?
I think it makes it was the way they did the tax bill was done in such a partisan way, using the reconciliation process. And, you know, the last time we did comprehensive tax reform took 3 years. You had Reagan and Tip O'Neill working together, Republicans and Democrats, extraordinary hearings, CBO's heavy involvement. And we just had none of that this time. We went to a conference committee between House and Senate conferees, Democrat and Republican, to work out the final compromise. We couldn't even offer amendments at the conference committee. I've never seen anything like that. We had 5 minutes to talk, and CBO was not there. That was outrageous. And what that really did is dramatically undercut confidence and trust. Since you need trust around here. You need to know that when people give you their word, it's worth something. And I think that's been badly damaged. It's going to take a while to repair it. They've actually did a bipartisan transportation bill where there's actually both sides where I had a fair chance to participate in logic and with CBO in the room and smart people helping figure this stuff out. You know, that would go some way toward restoring the confidence that people don't have in us.
Right. Okay. Well, give me your odds on getting an infrastructure bill done this year. Like, we got a 50% chance. We got a 25% chance. We're going to make this happen. Handicap it for me.
Yeah, I think the glass is half full. And there, people want us to do it. There's an opportunity here for the administration. They need a win. And I don't think they, from the eyes of most voters, they don't think the tax bill was a win. But they need a win. And frankly, we care desperately in our party about jobs, particularly for not the wealthiest in the country, but for folks that are middle and the bottom. And we wanted things to help them. We know, and we're told by, I think it was McKinsey and Company's Global Institute, said if we would robustly fund transportation infrastructure and infrastructure more broadly, we could add huge amounts of people to work that are on the sidelines, unemployed, underemployed, put a lot of people, millions of people to work over the next 10 years, millions of people to work, grow GDP dramatically. And honest to God, most economists that I've talked to, and I talked to some really smart ones, said this tax bill, at the end of the day, is going to add a very modest amount to GDP, very modest amount, and not a whole hell of a lot to employment. But we know that if we did infrastructure, roads, highways, bridges, rail, ports, all that stuff, broadband deployment, we know that we'd get job growth. We know that the GDP would grow. And that's a great lure. That's a great attraction. And I think we need to work hard to try to get there.
Let's end on a much more important question, and that is handicap the upcoming Detroit Tigers season for me.
Yes. This is what we say in baseball, a rebuilding season. And I I could probably start at third base this year for the Tigers because
they shed a lot of contracts, right?
They're not going to be there. They shed a lot of money. They had a huge amount of money.
Is Miggy still there, or Miggy's gone?
Let Verlander go, one of the great pitchers of my lifetime, and Upton, one of Jay Upton out in the outfield, to let those guys go. But there's huge contracts associated with them. So it's fun. It's fun to watch the new guys and some of the intricacies that we're going through and signing like people to minor league deals now and folks that had a couple of good years and then they were down for a year, try to pick out who still has some gas in the tank. It's fun to do that.
Yeah. Any chance I can convert you into a Yankee fan?
No.
No, even with Stanton on board and Aaron Judge.
People have asked me, who's your favorite baseball team? And I've always said, whoever's playing against the Yankees.
Oh, so you're a hater, a true hater.
No, I don't hate them. My sister was a Yankees fan just because they won.
Right, okay.
And a lot of Yankees fans, if people walk around these New York Yankees baseball hats, they just want to be perceived to be associated with a winner. And I pull out my Tigers hat and I say, Go to Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, there you go. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us. Really do appreciate your time.
That was fun. Thanks a lot, Ben.
So that's a wrap on this week's Politico Money Podcast. Thanks so much to Senator Carper for joining us. Thanks to my producers, Bridget Mulcahy and Michaela Rodriguez. And remember, if you're enjoying the show, please do subscribe to Politico Money on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. And rate us and write that written review. And remember, we've got Senator James Inhofe next week. If you have questions for him, please do tweet at me at Morning Money Ben or email me on bwhite@politico.com. And we look forward to having you next week.